This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Come get some. Beware, I live. IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Greg Miller, Justin Davis.
Hey.
And Charles Onyet is here. So Valve has confirmed they're jumping into hardware development. We've been hearing rumors about this for months now, since I think March of this year.
The Steam Box.
We first heard about the Steam Box.
That's what it is, right, Charles? They've confirmed it?
No, that has not been confirmed.
They're hiring a position, and that's how some of this leaked out.
And it's for hardware. They have not actually confirmed that they're making a console, correct? Right. They're just making some sort of hardware.
Does it say? Do you have the exact quote there?
Which, on their job listing?
Yeah.
So they're looking for an industrial designer. Says the
it
job
could
listing.
Be you.
It could be. The job listing says, we're frustrated by the lack of innovation in the computer hardware space, so we're jumping in. There's a real void in the marketplace. They said even basic input, the keyboard and mouse, haven't really changed in any meaningful way over the years. So there's a real void in the marketplace, and opportunities to create compelling user experiences are being overlooked.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't think Valve is building any kind of Steam Box or console equivalent. But you know, it sounds like what they're struggling with is something that, you know, a lot of, like, Nintendo has been struggling with for a while, which is trying to figure out a different way for people to interact with video games. And it's strictly the interface. It sounds like, based on the job listings and based on what Valve has said in the past about wearable computing, is really what they're interested in, is changing up that relationship between how you control things in-game and what you're actually doing, and moving beyond basically a controller or a mouse and keyboard or a Wiimote or, you know, whatever you want to associate with that.
Well, what's wrong with the mouse and keyboard? Is that broken?
I mean, it's stupid.
I'll tell you that. It's really dumb. It's a dumb way to control things.
All right, well.
I think we can all agree on that.
Okay. So I like a mouse and keyboard, but, you know, there are other ways to do things. And I think the thing that Valve's pointing out in that posting where they say they're frustrated with the lack of innovation is it seems like most people are willing to sit back and be like, oh, well, we've been using this for a while. We'll just keep using it, and we'll just keep building games for it. And so you don't see that dramatic offshoot into a different direction for where games can really go into, like, you know, alternate reality type stuff where you have, you know, overlays in front of where you're looking at that ties into the experience. I don't know exactly how that would necessarily work.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's an avenue Valve wants to explore. They want to see where that leads them.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely, the downside to this job listing, which is industrial designer, is that can mean anything. You know, so we have sort of the hints at the job listing, say, but industrial design is used for everything. It's used for chairs. It's used for anything that exists in the real world. Any physical object.
There's been a lack of development in gaming chairs.
But it's true. Like, this table and the chairs we're sitting on were designed by an industrial designer. Mm-hmm. And so,
What about this coffee mug?
Well, maybe not the coffee mug. That was designed by the wizards over at Peggle.
It's very Bauhaus. Sorry, no, it's not. Strike that from the record.
Don't include that.
I got a laugh out of that. So it could be as simple as them, you know, there's lots of people doing different things with keyboards and split keyboards, and maybe Valve just wants to design a keyboard that's more for gaming. Maybe they want, like, an official Steam controller. That's something that I thought about when I read this news, was it could be, like, as small a news as that.
Yeah, I mean, talking about design, too, if Valve really wants to push a new type of control mechanism, you know, it has to look nice. I don't think people are going to want this giant, you know, clunky thing that sits on the side of their head like Google, like the Google Glass stuff that we've seen. It's just this very sleek kind of attachment that sits on it, very Dragon Ball Z, but not quite as brightly colorful.
It's over 9,000! What, 9,000?
So this job listing doesn't mention wearable computing at all, but that's something that jumped in all of our minds just because that's something Gabe Newell, who's the title president, founder of Valve.
He's a co-founder of Valve, yeah.
And he's talked about wearable computing before, you know, which are either, you know, computers that are in, like, glasses that do overlays over your face, or, you know, there's different sort of ways of doing it. You know, some watches are considered wearable computers, Android-powered watches.
And so that solves a couple of problems, right? Because then you're no longer, I think, well, not necessarily problem, but that gets around the issue of having to learn, like, how to control a physical device and how to manipulate that isn't really natural. I mean, mouse and keyboard is not a natural way to interact with things. Yeah. A controller is not a natural way to interact with things. It reduces the amount of barriers between you and what you're doing in whatever kind of experience that would, you know, that would be associated with. I don't know if any really of Valve's products would necessarily fit in with that type of control.
Maybe future products. I mean, we don't know what those guys are cooking up. Maybe that's why episode 3 is taking so long.
Yeah, maybe it's just an entirely, it happens in the world around you. The world is your console.
Well, so that's like Oculus, right? The Oculus headset.
So that's virtual reality, and that's a full
big difference.
and Valve has backed that too. They said, "Hey, this is cool. Yeah. You know, we're interested in making something happen with this." And we have seen a little bit more support rollout for that. I believe Hawken is now, you know, supporting that in addition to Doom 3. And I mean, that's the type of thing where you're entirely immersed in the virtual world. Like, there's no overlay there. It's just, you're only seeing the virtual world. And I had a chance to put that on. It's a little disorienting in the prototype stage, just because there's just enough delay in the experience when you turn your head from side to side. I was playing Doom 3. When you turn your head from side to side, you get that sense that, oh my goodness, I've completely lost my balance. Mm-hmm. I have no sense of balance. And then it comes back. And it's just a split second, but it's enough to give you enough time to think, I'm going to fall over.
Yeah.
But then you don't.
But then you don't.
So there's still some work to be done there to really make that as cool as an experience as it could be.
So, I mean, this could be something very simple. You know, it could be, you know, a better mouse and keyboard is what they're looking for somebody. Yeah.
With more buttons. Fatality, tell us all about it.
Thanks, guys.
The answer
what
is not.
Frag and Rocks in Guild Wars 2.
That was such a cross-cultural hodgepodge of references.
Fatality gets around. He's all over the place.
What's Fatality up to these days?
He's living off that Skype money. He did that horrible PlayStation Vita Skype commercial.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think the answer is to add more buttons. You know, that it's going to be a simplification, a streamlining of the process. And, you know, like what Nintendo has tried to do, although they've gone in a weird direction with Wii U.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems to be what a lot of people are thinking of. And like with Kinect and, to a lesser extent, Move. in terms of degrees of success there.
You make a great point about the keyboard and mouse. You know, there's nothing wrong with it as a gaming input. You know, obviously millions and millions of gamers like gaming with WASD and a mouse. But it wasn't something that was made for games. Its games have developed in a way that they're shaped and fitted to work with this interface instead of something designed from the ground up with a game interface in mind. And that's something that's always on my mind is the mobile editor, because people talk about, I don't like gaming on a touchscreen. My iPad wasn't made for video games. I'm like, well, the keyboard and mouse wasn't made for video games either. But, you know, it's up to the designers to make that work for the interface. So if a company like Valve that has really deep pockets and the ability to sort of think big and do whatever they want. You know, who the heck knows what they're cooking up over there?
Yeah,
but.
And the other advantage too is if it is some wearable computing with a virtual overlay of some kind. You know, who says that's necessarily restricted to application for games? You know, who knows how big Valve is really thinking?
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
In those terms, they could go far beyond that. It's like, hey, guess what? We made the best wearable computing solution out there.
Yeah.
Everyone use this, like everyone, not just
so wearable computing has lots of applications in the medical field. You know, we're seeing Kinects being used in medicine. It's got a lot of applications in the military as well. There's definitely, I don't know what the heck. I don't think they're planning on making wearable computers for, next generation soldiers. But, it's cool. It's cool stuff.
Is there any precedence for software, like gaming software companies moving into hardware? Starting with software first, then moving into hardware? I was trying to think of something, but I couldn't.
Various companies like Microsoft, coming out with Xbox after not being really present in that space.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
If we're talking about that kind of thing.
Mad Cats went the other way.
That's what I was gonna say.
They made their peripherals. Now they make some games.
Games do they make?
I mean,
they have World War II shooter.
Yeah, the Dogfighter one that's out right now.
Really?
Companies will weave in and out as like Sega is like, whoops, that didn't work, right. And then Microsoft comes in and is like, hey, we're gonna give this a shot, and they wound up being pretty successful with it.
Yeah.
I don't think Valve is interested in taking that angle.
Yeah. I mean, there's Red Lynx with Guitar Hero, there's examples. Mm.
But yeah, it seems like with Valve, with this listing and what they've said in the past about wearable computing, they're much more interested in broad reaching solutions instead of trying to kind of take. Because they already have such a big sector of the PC market that's been closed off with Steam, and they have that platform, and they keep trying to open up, like with Greenlight, and they're just like, there's too much coming in. We need to broaden this out.
Can you explain to me what Greenlight is? This is like now indie games. In order to get onto Steam, they have to be upvoted through Greenlight. Is that correct?
Sort of.
Well, so Valve isn't basically as involved in the submission process, because I don't know what the exact numbers are behind the scenes there, but I imagine they were overwhelmed with people being like, I need this game on Steam, mm-hmm. Figure out if it's good enough or not to be on there. And this is just a way to kind of hand over some of that work, basically, to the community, much like they've done with letting people profit from creations for Team Fortress 2 and Dota, where they submit designs and then they can actually profit off of them. It's just a way of
Greenlight lets people, if you're a game maker and you've made a game, there's a lot of actually mobile games that have come out and been successful on mobile, and they're trying to get it released onto Steam, get a PC version out there. So you can submit your game, a trailer and screenshots and sort of your bullet points of what your game is, and then it's out there for the community to vote up. And you can thumb it up or thumb it down, and then if something gets enough thumbs up, then Valve, is it guaranteed that it gets on Steam at that point, or then they're like, well, we'll seriously consider it?
I'm not sure if it's a guarantee in the system itself.
I'm sure they have some sort of fail-safe in there that if, big boobs get voted up, they don't need to play.
Yeah.
Is that on there? I haven't looked. It may be on there. It's tough to actually search.
Hey, Gabe, get on that controller, huh? Yeah. See you nerds later.
You just float away.
to that point, though, that may honestly be what drives through some kind of major innovation there.
Boobs.
If it's related somewhat to that kind of sector of entertainment, then
isn't there something like the adult film industry has always pushed along new advancements in technology? What is that
the porn thing? Industry and the video game industry, actually, this is literally true. They pushed forward the internet more than any other category in terms of bandwidth requirements, in terms of flash video, in terms of streaming, and all the rest of it is led by pornography.
Of course. And I mean, a lot of the innovation in this space, like especially with the 3D displays we're talking about, the Rift, like Oculus, like their display, at least according to John Carmack, was better than anything else. And it was Palmer Luckey who came up with this and developed this and was just obsessed with making this a really cool device. So yeah, you can see huge advances in something that some companies are pouring tons of money into. Like Sony, for instance, tried with their VR headset. To make something kind of cool, and I guess that wasn't the greatest solution. Again, this is according to Carmack. I'm repeating what he told me, because he knows.
I have an original idea. Charles.
He knows a lot more than I do. So, you can see these big advances from spaces that you may not expect.
Yeah,
Charles, Justin, you've both been playing a lot of Guild Wars 2, and Greg, you've been seeing a lot of.
I've seen some Guild Wars 2 as I go back to play Sleeping Dogs or Pinball.
Zen Pinball.
Yeah. Zen Pinball.
You like Guild Wars 2?
I do. I've been playing a lot of Guild Wars 2. I really like it so far.
Where are you in your review?
I am. So I've been updating regularly a review in progress on IGN. I've played the game now for 112 hours. I'm level 72. I have a guardian, Norn, and I'm.
Is his name Norn?
No, Norn is the race. Okay.
He's basically human. I don't know why they're a separate race, actually. He looks very
human. Larger. I live in the snow.
They're like snow.
It's like
humans.
The real Charles.
I know,
there.
Right?
That's why I picked Norn. I think the game, it does a lot of things right. It tries to eliminate the grind elements as much as possible and make it very easy for people to get together and to enjoy a social kind of experience, whether that's just a kind of skill-less event system where things just happen around the world in Guild Wars 2. Like, giant demon will show up on a mountainside, and the game's like, go here, and it just drops a whole bunch of arrows on screen and notifications that it's like, you should go to this area. So you go there, you fight a huge demon, there are other people there, and then you get rewards for it. You don't have to jump through a bunch of, oh, well, are we on the same, you know, level of progress on this quest chain? Yeah. I think you need to reset. Okay, reinvite me to the group. Nope, that didn't work. All right, switch from overflow to this, and it's like that. It just works. Like, it just, you get there, you fight the demon, you get your stuff, and you have fun. And then if you want the more structured content, that's also there with dungeons, where you actually do run into some of those group making issues. That hasn't been flawless.
There
that's
are a few bad, quests, actually. But what I like about it is that it's not really very quest based. It's like Charles said, it's very dynamic, event driven. So yeah, you'll just see something pop up in the world, and it's not always like a giant demon. It might be like, you know, they're trying to get this convoy is trying to get from point A to point B, so defend them. And so then you go do that. Then when they get to point B, it's like, well, now there's a big boss, and by then, you know, there's dozens of people there all fighting, and you all work together, and then when it's over, you just disperse. It's very friendly about how you cooperate with people. In other MMOs, it's a big fight. Usually whoever attacks an enemy first gets that enemy, and they get the experience for it, and no one else does. But in this game, it's all very cooperative and friendly, and you can sort of share when you're attacking enemies, and you can share resource nodes. You also used to fight over, like, well, I need to mine that copper, and whoever gets there first gets that copper. But now it doesn't take it from somebody else. If you mine it, somebody else can mine it at the same time. So it really emphasizes cooperative play with strangers in a way that I don't think any other MMO does.
Yeah, it establishes a sense of cooperation and basically friendliness within the main game world.
That's nice.
It is. It's really friendly. Everyone's working together. If you see somebody else going towards an enemy, it's not like, you better not touch that enemy because I've been standing here waiting for him to respawn forever. Yeah. And it's like, you can both just kill him and you both get rewards. You know, it's the type of cooperation. And
killing together, that's how friendships are made. Also, my little rabbit is adorable. My rabbit character.
Yeah.
I made a little rabbit. She's got red hair and blue eyes.
She's sexy?
She's got big floppy ears. It is not a sexy
rabbit. Oh, you made Nasura. You made Nasura.
Asura.
Okay.
The race is called Asura, but they're basically little rabbit people.
Okay.
And I gave her, you have options in character creation, and I gave her the biggest, floppiest ears possible. She's so adorable.
Oh, God.
Except for they have pointy teeth.
You've given her the biggest, floppiest other things possible.
Yeah, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Gabe! Where's my controller? Hey.
Charles, while I have you here, this is a question from one of our listeners, Bobby O'Hare. He says, I want to be a PC gamer.
Okay.
Ever since I heard of Steam, I've been wondering what's a good PC for a person like me in the $300 to $400 price range?
So the answer to that is not simple.
It's pretty cheap.
It requires research, and that's also
cheaper than an iPad.
That's really cheap for a computer. Probably, I would say more like, you
maybe
know,
he means
spend
pounds. Maybe this guy's British.
You can get 500, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say in the 500 to 600 range, you'd probably be looking at something pretty good. But I would have to go price out. I mean, you do have to do research. You have to go price out components. You can't just point at something.
But you are saying he'll need to build it himself.
You can't just go. There's not like a laptop that would be a good solution for him. No?
I would say
this is why Greg loves PC gaming. Just looking out there at all of the crestfallen people trying to get into PC gaming because it's so easy.
Well, you can't just point at one thing and be like that. You know, it's about, you know, figuring out what works for you and hunting for deals ideally, if you're looking at that price range, it probably would be self-assembly.
I mean, you're right though, Greg. This is kind of the hassle of PC gaming, right?
That's why you're not into it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, one of the reasons.
Yeah, I just like there's a lot of PC games I would love to play, but like this is exactly it. Like I have, you know.
And I wouldn't even necessarily use a laptop. I'm more of a desktop person, I guess, and I would recommend that because for the money, you can get a much more powerful system that is upgradable over a longer span of time. So you can still have, you know, a lot of the same components and be like, well, I want a performance increase, swap it in and out one part, and you're good, yeah, as opposed to a laptop where it's like, oh, well.
Yeah. I don't like the comparison between, you know, people talk about, oh, I need to spend $1,000 to play games on my PC, but an Xbox is, you know, $199 or whatever. And it's like, but a PC can do a lot more. Sure. Than just play games. Like, that's not a one-to-one comparison. Like, my
Your Xbox can play Netflix.
Hey, there you go.
So can
it's
PC,
got Bing on it. You can Bing stuff.
You can Bing stuff on Xbox, yeah.
Just Bing it.
I don't think the Xbox has Crunchyroll, though.
No, that's a PS3 exclusive. Yeah. That's a PS3 exclusive.
So my gaming PC is actually a Mac, and then I dual boot it. I boot it into Windows when I want to play games, and then I boot it into Mac when I actually, you know, want to compute and
look at porn.
Yeah, and, you know, download my hardcore pornography.
You download it? Oh. You can just stream that.
Is that
stuff,
weird?
Justin,
yeah. I don't know.
He doesn't want to lose it when he finds his favorites.
They got so many gigabytes. all those gigs. They're on floppy disks, stashed around. Yeah. I put it on the floppy disk, and then I stick it. They're hiding in my wall.
Not a zip drive?
get the zip drive.
Okay.
The 100 megabytes.
I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer for that. That was basically my long answer.
It's okay. We had an entertaining answer, and I think that's all that the world could really ask for.
Okay.
The world knows now. Yeah. PC gaming sucks.
For the record, I like PC gaming.
Just to clarify.
Okay.
I liked how on Up at Noon when I said that to the DayZ guy, he was just like, yeah. He didn't even argue. He's like, yep.
No, I mean, I wouldn't argue against it. It is complicated, and you know, it's not easy to get into.
It can be. Like, the games are so cheap. Like, I got Just Cause 2 for $5, and you boot it up, and
God.
It runs,
what
and
a
it's
steal.
Great.
What a steal.
But then sometimes, like, some games just don't. Like, I bought Dungeon Defenders, and it's like, nope, it just it's just didn't work.
I went through all the process to get DayZ, and I bought Arma off of Steam, and it installed the first one fine, and the second one, it did little green boxes started popping up, and it's like, nope, error.
Yeah.
And it didn't even tell me what error code or what it was. I'm like, all right, great.
It can seem to work fine, and then sometimes something goes wrong, and then it's just down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out what exactly happened.
My favorite part is I get an error message, and then I Google that error message, and I find like a message board topic where someone's like, hey, I'm getting this error message. Does anybody know? And it was like 18 months ago, and no one ever answered. It's like, well, and that's like the one Google result for my issue. I just want to find that guy and be like, we're bros now. We're air message bros.
Hey.
Yeah.
You're
hey, man. You're not alone.
I hope this case of yours is worth it.
Trust me. You think I'd put you in danger for nothing?
Is that a trick question?
I'm out of ammo.
My turn.
Welcome back to GameScoop. I'm Damon Hatfield. We're talking about whether or not AAA games are dying out, because the creative director of Assassin's Creed 3 believes that they are. His quote is, "We're the last of the dinosaurs. There are fewer and fewer of these games being made."
We're the last of the dinosaurs. It sounds like it's an action movie.
Denver the Last Dinosaur, right?
Denver the Last Dinosaur.
I would watch that movie.
He was my friend and a whole lot more.
I like to think of Assassin's Creed 3 as Denver. That's good.
Yeah. Wow, that putting a lot of pressure on himself there, huh? To be the last of the dinosaurs here.
Well,
first off, no one does it like Ubisoft. No one's like, there's like 300 people working on Assassin's Creed spread over 8 countries. Yes, you are the last dinosaur, because that doesn't make any sense.
There's probably 1,000 people working on that game, I would guess.
They've been working on it for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a big operation.
He makes it. He's painting with a very broad brush, saying that, oh, we're the last of the dinosaurs, and this is the end of AAA development or whatever like that. It's like, I mean, Naughty Dog's a AAA developer, right? And like, they're able to make an Uncharted game or Last of Us. It seems every 2 years now they have two teams. They have one office. You know what I mean? Yeah. By the way he's describing the way Assassin's Creed 3 has been run, that is correct. Naughty Dog is not in the same boat, but that's still a AAA game.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's Uncharted is a very, very sort of tight experience that's sort of, you know, very, very focused on doing a specific thing, and Assassin's Creed seems bigger. It seems like just the scope of the project seems larger to me.
Sure, but I mean, Fallout, the next Fallout's not going to not be Fallout.
That's true. But it's not going to make sandbox games anymore?
Yeah.
So first of all, I don't think he's saying AAA games are going away. He's absolutely right. There's less of them. There's already less of them. There's going to continue to be less of them. It's moving more and more. Video games are moving more and more to the movie industry model, where there's like a few tentpole films every year, and like each studio has maybe two each summer. Like Paramount Pictures might release two big summer movies every year, and that's it till the next year. And I think that's the way the video game industry is moving, is we're not going to see you know, dozens and dozens of AAA games come out anymore. It's just
that's a big distinction between less and none. You know, right. Saying like we're the last of them, I don't think is true because
he makes it
I think
it's going to be extinct.
Exactly, because mid-tier games, like I think mid-tier games are dying out because you see something that's, like Amalur sells 1.5 million or whatever, and that's not enough anymore. You know, you need to sell so many millions of copies to be profitable at this point. That I think you're going to only see AAA games really because you're going to see games that have 100, 200 million put into them that can make it back. You know, like Call of Duty makes $1 billion in 10 days or whatever. Like, that's the kind of money games need to be making right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a specific category of games that are going away, and it is games like Amalur. You know, we're going to see things at the very, very high end, like Assassin's Creed and Fallout and these big franchises, and you're going to see downloadable stuff. You know, Xbox Live Arcade, $20 is not uncommon on PSN and XBLA anymore. You know, we're starting to see $10, $15, $20 on the App Store. And that's going to take the place of what used to be sort of these B-level games at retail, I think.
Yeah,
that's
exciting. Smart.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you, Damon, you've been on the cutting edge of this downloadable stuff for a long time. You were back in the day when I was all like, "I need my cartridges." You're like, "No, man."
It's all me putting on my.
You were putting on sunglasses.
I used two hands.
You had big glasses back in the day. But no, I mean, that's the big thing is like all these downloadable games that you're able to get on Xbox Live and PSN are exciting because they're doing something different and publishers are willing to take that risk to give them that little bit of money compared to a giant AAA experience to go out and get this cool thing.
So what are the mid-tier games? Like you mentioned Amalur.
Yeah.
Well, I think
which everyone should play, which is awesome.
Darksiders
for sure.
And I think games we are not
moving forward, Dead Space and Crysis. I mean, there's that quote about how Dead Space needs to sell 5 million copies to get another sequel or whatever. Like,
which can't happen.
That won't happen, exactly. Like, that's just not that ilk of game. That isn't the kind of game that's going to sell Assassin's Creed numbers. You know, I don't think that happens anymore.
Yeah. I mean, but I think
you liken it to the movie industry, though. But, like, in the movie industry, something like Moonrise Kingdom only made $40 million, you know, but like that's okay, and that was considered successful.
Well, yeah, right. Like this is, you know, you don't make a game like Moonrise Kingdom for $100 million. They have that's their true. Financial models. They know what this movie can make based on who it's going to appeal to and how many theaters it's going to play in, and then they budget it. You know, that's like we can give you $15 million to make this movie, and games haven't quite figured out. You know, that mid-tier of you know, the games, their quality suffers as a result of having a lower budget sometimes. You know, they bite off more than they can chew. Unless you do something like, you know, I don't know, like Castle Crashers or a downloadable thing. Mm-hmm. That's actually, I was thinking about how, do you remember Alien Hominid on the GameCube?
Yeah.
That was a big deal to get that game. Like, it was $30, and it was like, oh man, Alien Hominid is finally being released. And now games like that come out every single week on downloadable platforms.
And that was, like, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
Maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah, so really...
You're so young.
I know.
You're innocent. So young and innocent. We didn't even know it had the PDA levels in it. but yeah, so I think... There is bad news and sort of tough times ahead for the video game industry, but there's a lot of like bright spots as well, and the rise of downloadable sort of filling the gap that the mid-tier.
What do you say? There's, you know, bad stuff ahead. What are you talking about? You're talking about this, like the
winter
end of
winter is coming, Greg.
Yeah,
winter is coming.
Yeah, that's good though. I mean, we need to shed our skin here and be the sexy snake like, outside of it. you have a new skin and you're all set to go. You know what I mean? It's a rebirth, all that jazz. You know how they talk about it in the religions. But that's good, right? I mean, I personally, I like to see, you know, a business model that isn't work anymore fall away. You know what I mean? We're talking about these mid-tier games disappearing. Sure. I'm not really going to bat an eyelash if a mid-tier game that I never played from THQ goes away. You know what I mean?
But you do like Amalur, like you were just saying.
I loved Amalur, yes. But, I mean, Amalur was screwed anyway, right? Thanks, Ryan Geddes. Anyways, but, I mean, it's one of those things. Those guys are still talented, and they can take that engine somewhere else and play it. Their story sucked. I still don't know what the hell's happening in that game as much as I love it.
You know what else jumped out at me about this news story? I would love to play a video game called The Last Dinosaur.
Yes.
Well, they need to make They need to make a Denver The Last Dinosaur
How
game.
How cool would that be? It'd be open world. You'd run around as the dinosaur.
But you're the last one, so there's just no other dinosaurs.
So far, this sounds terrible. Okay. I'm one dinosaur running around the world.
No, look, okay,
it's
so
all
maybe,
ash, and you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, right? Maybe everything is trying to kill me.
Maybe you're not the last dinosaur.
Okay.
There's not very many dinosaurs left. So it's like GTA. It's an open world, but you play as a dinosaur, and then you run around hunting and being hunted.
Who do
by
you
other
take
dinosaurs.
Quests from? Like the Triceratops wants you to help like guard its eggs, and then you have to survive waves of brontosaurus.
You've really thought this through, actually.
I don't have maybe you're a human and you're hunting dinosaurs.
I believe they did this, and it was called Dino D-Day. I don't think we need to worry about that.
Also, the Doritos game, Dash of Destruction. I believe you could play as a dinosaur.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Some of the more cynical comments on this Assassin's Creed
cynical comments
quote story blame this on mobile games. But mobile games killed AAA games.
I mean, that's mobile is digital, right? And I think the rise of digital games are what's really hurt this whole category.
But it's funny because the publisher's doing this. Like, Ubisoft is huge in the digital space and in the mobile space.
Well, yeah, they have to be. You have to be future-proofing yourself in going into these.
I just find it funny to blame mobile for this because, if anything, the profits they're making from mobile allow these things to happen currently. Yeah. That's why they can still make these games.
If you look at who's huge on mobile, it's EA and Ubisoft, and they're the companies that are...
And Activision's now trying to get into it.
Activision has staffed up a big mobile division, and they're some of the only companies that are still making AAA console games.
It's the normal thing of comments. You can't take them too seriously. But yeah, I mean, for anyone blaming the rise of mobile / downloadable, I mean, blame yourself. You're the one downloading the games and buying the games digitally.
Or it's just people, right?
Like, birds. I mean,
it's just the industry growing. This is it. No. We're just shedding our skin.
I think there's certainly people like me and Damon and some other people in the office that enjoy playing games on our iPad and also enjoy console games. You know, obviously that category of gamer exists. But most people that are playing games on their mobile devices, it's not like they're playing Cut the Rope instead of Assassin's Creed 3. They're different people. They're reaching different people.
Yeah, they're just playing Cut the Rope.
You know, I was on vacation last week, and my dad heard of Angry Birds for the first time.
For the first time?
He had never heard of Angry Birds. So
Andrew, come to the foyer. What's this Angry Birds I hear so much about?
So I think he's downloading it. I'll get his impression.
No, stop him. Tell him to wait for the PS3 version where you can get trophies.
The trilogy. Why spend $1 when you can spend $60?
What's the pig one then?
Bad Piggies.
Bad Piggies.
Yes.
This is a new game, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
By Rovio.
Bad Piggies coming out in a couple weeks.
Yep. We're all very excited.
It finally tells the story of what's happening.
Tells the story of the pigs. They've been misunderstood.
I agree.
Now, I've been saying that about Angry Birds for a long time. If you really stop to think about Angry Birds, they're suicide bombers.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. Those birds don't come back. So these birds are flying and crashing themselves into buildings that then collapse.
Well, I mean,
they kill everyone inside.
But with all due respect, it's because the pigs stole their eggs.
But
if
like
your children were stolen, when you have a kid, you're gonna understand.
No, but it's also it's different pigs. It's not the same pig. So their
so you're saying it's profiling.
Their eggs were stolen, and then they say, "Motherfucker, we're gonna crash
all
this bird."
Okay.
Into your house.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
Especially in the first Angry Birds, there's a level that looks like a city skyline. It's not even like crappy little wood houses. It's like a real building.
Well, they're still crappy little wood.
Well, the background, I mean,
is right. It's a city background. You're right. Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yep. I think you're onto something there. Anyway, the state of the game industry today is you have a few AAA games coming out every quarter, some mid-tier games, and then tons and tons of small downloadable games, right?
Yeah.
So we anticipate in the future those just like brushing away those mid-tier games. So there'd just be a few AAA games and then a wide ocean of downloadable stuff.
If only because it's going to get more expensive. I mean, we've been talking about that forever now. Next generation games are going to be really expensive because they're being developed at a level that's much higher than now. You know, like the resolution's huge, the process is, I don't know anything about computers.
What are you saying?
The resolution on widescreen games is huge.
Rolling this back.
Andrew Goldfarb out here giving the EA presentation.
You put question marks around
my head. I'm not a programmer.
I'm just saying.
I want them to bring you on stage.
I'm saying the hardware required to make games is getting more expensive, and as a result, the budget of these games is skyrocketing. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay. See, I think it's going to, and I think when we're talking about there being more downloadable games in that ocean expanding, you're talking about the fact that it's going to become easier and easier to make games for that. You know what I mean? We already see it with PlayStation Mobile, that Sony's like, we have to give these tools to these people to compete with the App Store. And when PlayStation 4 comes around, I have to imagine that's going to be a big part of it. The fact that, you know, here's the development kit. They already do it with PubFund, where they're like, hey, independent developers, here's this. You can get it for free. Go make games, please. And you see success like Mutant Blobs Attack and stuff like that. So I definitely think you'll see more and more people and more and more, you know, developers being able to get into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be a difference between digital and retail. You know, there's going to be $1 games on the App Store and $5 and $10 games on the consoles, and then, you know, Telltale stuff is $30 for those season passes usually. And then there's going to be retail games. Nintendo has said they're going to have day and date, you know, with their retail releases, digital
releases.
They're already doing it, yeah.
That's what I mean. And the next gen is going to do that too. I mean, Halo 6 or, you know, whatever we're playing on the next Xbox is 100%. You're going to be able to download
it. Sure, yeah, you're going to be able to look. And it'll be like Steam, where you can probably download it and have it all set to go, and at 12:01, it'll just unlock.
Yeah. So there's going to be every range of, you know, $10, $20, $30, $40 price points on digital, I think.
And I think you're kind of seeing that already, because there's no longer that, like, stigma attached to downloadable games. Like, it used to be, like, it's pretty good for a downloadable game, but you don't hear that anymore. Right. Like, now downloadable games are some of the best games of this generation. generation.
That's true. I do still see that in the comments and articles. Like,
sure.
You know,
this yeah, is not everyone downloaded that way. Game,
but yeah.
I mean, not everyone has updated their mindset.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's personal preference. Like, I've been playing games a long time. I don't have that much attention span. I'd rather buy six $10 games than one $60 game. Almost always. Almost always.
Yeah.
Or 61 dollar iPhone games.
Or 600 1 cent iPhone games.
The resolution is huge.
No.
Look at all them pixels.
It's a lot of resolutions.
That would only be $6, Gold Farm.
The worst.
You know, Andrew, it's been a good trial period for you on GameScoop, but we'll see you later, all right? Just somebody get Steve Butts up here.
Stay tuned for my math and science corner coming soon.
You mentioned Telltale. I'm deep into episode 3 of Walking Dead.
Okay.
There's some fucking huge things that happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
There.
Walking Dead 3.
But I encountered a bug.
Yeah, they're there. Sorry about that.
You in zombie games, you always find bugs.
I know, right?
It's well, I mean, with all due respect, in The Walking Dead, it's not that hard to find a bug.
See, I'm trying to wait. I'm trying to wait until the last episode to play these games.
Ah, yeah. See, I couldn't do it because I want to be part of the conversation.
That's me. That's me now. Now I'm kind of regretting it. I'm probably going to jump in and start playing.
All right, so they're crazy.
Go ahead. And, yeah. But, and we won't spoil anything, right? We're not spoiling anything about Walking Dead.
We were playing at my house, and then we like stopped at the part when you you run into the tanker. There's like a roadblock.
Yeah.
So we stopped there, and then I took my hard drive over to her place. We're going to continue later on. When I loaded up the game on her console, it couldn't find our save file.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And then
is that because you weren't saving it to like a memory stick or anything?
No, it was on the hard drive. Huh. But when I put the hard drive back in my own console, it found it right away. So for some reason, it couldn't find the save file on a different console.
Good job, Microsoft. Am I right?
I don't know if that's Microsoft's fault.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is it sounds like it probably is. I don't know that much about it.
I mean, I don't have that problem with other games.
Okay.
So I don't know. But Walking Dead, or episode 3 is great.
Yeah, totally.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Andrew Goldfarb. You might be the world's biggest Final Fantasy 13 2 fan.
I might be.
And also the only. The only.
By default. Yeah.
Goldfarb, how many hours have you played Final Fantasy 13 2?
It's like 102 or
that's
something.
That's already
like as much as yeah. Charles has played Guild Wars 2.
Sure. I mean, it was like 90. It was 90 to get all of the achievements, and then or 95 maybe, and then the DLC was like an extra few hours. And DLC is really bad.
So you have 1,000 out of 1,000 in that game, or trophies or whatever.
Yeah, I played in 360, so I have 1,000 out of 1,000.
Wow. Good luck finding your save.
Yeah. You and when I move my hard drive around, when Kim wants to play Final Fantasy, we're screwed.
So how do you feel about Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13?
The phrase I've been using is that I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I think the Doomsday stuff sounds really cool. But I also, you know, we were talking about this in Beyond yesterday. I really don't need to see more of this universe. Like, I'm to the point where, ironically, the questions I'm left with at the end of 13.2 aren't about Lightning. Like, that's not even the character I would have wanted to continue with. And I don't know, I'd be just as happy with Final Fantasy 15 and just moving on from these characters at this point. And even I'm saying that. So who is this
even
game for?
I'm saying
who is this game for?
So I haven't played Final Fantasy 13. What I want to know about this new sequel is, does it still have the guy with the bird in his hair?
Well, Saz?
Apparently not.
So he returned in 13.2 in DLC. Which is really bad.
Did it have the bird?
Was it's a casino. Different? Yeah,
that's
a
DLC.
First of all, it's not a
birds.
Bird. It's a chocobo.
Chocobos are birds.
Maybe. I feel like chocobos are their own fictional offset of some kind of new species, but sure.
Don't look at me. I'm not going to help. I want to know, where does the prinny fall in? Is it a penguin? Is it a bird? I don't know.
But yeah, he was in the DLC. I mean, this takes place 200 years after 13.2. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything because in that game you're jumping through time and the timeline's all messed up.
You've spoken. You didn't answer
my question. Did Lightning go anywhere in the last game? And he's like, no. So what is she returning from?
Well, she wasn't in the last game except for the DLC, really, right?
No. She's like sort of in. So the game starts with her. You do a quick time event as her at the beginning. Then you play as her sister for most of the game. But Lightning's like woven throughout the story.
Okay.
And then the DLC involves her entirely. Yeah. The last DLC.
Okay.
So, the Doomsday mechanic that you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, the world's going to end in 13 days, and a game is apparently designed to play multiple times because it's not really that long.
Yeah, and I was talking to Clements about this. Like, he compared it to Chrono Trigger in that in Chrono Trigger, getting to Lavos at the end, you can do it really fast. You can basically like skip through certain time gates and get to the end of the game really quickly. And this seems to be that way. Like, the way Clements is describing it, when your timer runs out, you're basically going to fight the final boss ready or whether you're ready or not, and you have to rewind. I'm so articulate today. It's awesome. The resolutions are huge.
So it almost sounds more like Majora's Mask.
Exactly. It's very much a Majora's Mask. I mean, and there does seem to be that rewind mechanic where if you get there too early or if you die or whatever, you can go back and reset.
Interesting. I didn't care for Majora's Mask.
Crazy. You're crazy.
I'm really still into like play that. Remember, you, me, and Altano made that pact that we're going to play it after E3?
Well, Altano hates it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
The question is how to play it. I wish they'd put it out on 3DS. Then I'd play it on 3DS.
Yeah, that would be really nice. It's
just don't.
Your Wii U will take your Wii Virtual Console games and let you continue playing them. So you can do it that way. Play under your little tablet.
Yeah.
Or huge tablet.
Justin, what's going on with this Steam Greenlight thing? I hear that people are like not thrilled about it.
Yeah. So it's always been sort of a pain to submit your game to Steam. It was so important if you had an indie game to get it on Steam. Otherwise, you know, not that many people were going to buy it. You had to try to sell it in your own store, get on one of the other platforms no one was using. So they opened up this thing called Steam Greenlight, where anybody can just submit their game to Greenlight. It goes on a web page, and then people can thumb games up or down.
So you get a page like you would on Kickstarter that sort of pitches your
game? Well,
your
I mean, you get like a Steam page. Like, you know, you have your trailer, your screenshots, and your bullets about your game, and then people can say thumbs up or thumbs down. And then once something reaches, you know, a certain number of thumbs up or a certain percentage of people thumb something up, then, you know, you can get your game on Steam. And that's like a really good idea in practice, but immediately, within like the first 2 days, it just got absolutely overwhelmed. Like, there's something like 1,000 games on Steam Greenlight now. It's impossible to find. Like, if you're an indie developer, you want your game on Steam now, people have to sift through, you know, hundreds or thousands of games to find it. And people are starting to submit, you are seeing games like Castle Crashers on Steam, but like, it's obviously not submitted by the actual developer.
And people wrote like Half-Life 3 and all these fake games.
And I also saw
we had to ruin it, internet.
The joke that I made yesterday about the boobies on Steam.
Yeah. Was waiting for that controller, Gabe. So is Kim.
Yeah, buddy. Was that was not random. There was someone grabbed a screenshot. Someone submitted to Steam Greenlight boobs, and it just went through. There's no filter, no submission process at all. Anything just goes up on the site.
So was this short-sighted on Valve's part?
I don't know. I would say yes, it's absolutely short-sighted. Any system that allows you to get, you know, nudity onto your website is short-sighted. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what they've done, their solution is to, it now you have to spend $100 to submit your game to Steam Greenlight, and that money goes to charity. So Valve, it's not about the money for them. It's about people only submitting things that they're serious about submitting.
And I mean, like we were just talking about, there are so many digital games now that you kind of have to moderate what can go in. And it's the same fee. It's $100 per year to develop in the App Store as well. So, I mean, I think this makes sense.
You pay $100. That's a recurring fee to keep your game there?
To be a developer. Yeah, to be able to be certified to submit games and everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, that $100 fee, I'm of the opinion that if you're making a video game and you're serious about it, you want it sold on Steam, you know, $100 should be just part of your development cost. I'm kind of okay with that.
That doesn't sound outrageous to me.
The counterpoint is, you know, there's lots of different developers in different situations. I can't presume to know every developer's situation, and if you don't have that $100, you know, you're kind of SOL. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, let's say you made it on your free time. This isn't something you had a budget for. It doesn't make any exceptions or compromises for, it doesn't matter how good something is. It's only if you have the $100. What if you made the best game ever, but you don't have the $100? Like, you're a kid. Like, you know.
But even when I was like 15, you mow four lawns and you have $100.
If you made the best
$5 a lawn? Jeez, how big are these lawns?
I made $15 a lawn.
All right, maybe 10 lawns.
Dollars and cents with Gold Farm.
If you made the best game ever, then it doesn't matter. You don't need Steam, you know.
Sure.
Yeah, and like Charles was saying this morning, like, If you're not willing to put up $100 for your game, it probably isn't that great.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is the majority of people are going to spend $100 and their game still isn't going to get on Steam. And that doesn't feel good, and that sucks. Like, it goes to charity. You know, worst case scenario, that, you spent $100 on charity, and there's worse things than that.
Charity.
Yeah, so that's what's going on with Steam Greenlight. The whole system has been not a debacle, but it has not been good. Mm-hmm. It's been not. It didn't turn out the way that they wanted it to. The first, like, I refreshed Greenlight that first day, and there was these great indie games and great games that I'm familiar with. That I'm like, yeah, it'd be awesome to have that on Steam. But then it just got overwhelmed by junk immediately.
Did you submit The Last Dinosaur?
It's like my sketches on like with like crayons.
Has Harris Foster submitted the game?
So look. Let me. Yeah. So Last Dinosaur. So you're not. You're not the Last Dinosaur. Maybe you're just. A
so
dinosaur.
It's called One of the Last Dinosaurs.
Sure, you're almost the Last Dinosaur. You get to choose at the start of the game what dinosaur you play as. Okay.
Now, how many choices are there?
Well, there's all kinds of different choices,
I know,
and they play differently. And so, if you want to be like a tiny dinosaur, maybe he's like stealthy. I don't know. Or you can be like a T-Rex, or maybe you're like a pterodactyl and can fly through the air.
Okay.
And then, so at some point, you're a predator, but then like something bigger might crash through the jungle, and now like you're being hunted, and it's an open jungle world.
Well, now I think we should just make a game called Tiny Dinosaur. But the dinosaur is like in modern times, and he has to sneak through a building in order to like find scraps of food in order to, and not be like seen by the people, because they'll be like, oh my god, there's a dinosaur, like stomp on it.
Yep. What if it's like Katamari, where every scrap he eats, he gets bigger until eventually he can start eating like...
Then he's not a tiny dinosaur anymore.
Yeah.
But then
the title screen changes once you get it. Large dinosaur.
Remember Terminator 2 on Game Boy, when you had to go in and reprogram him? As Kyle Reese.
That happened?
Was hard. That was hard. That was a hard game.
I don't think I played Terminator 2 on Game Boy.
You were missing out. I only got past it once.
I feel like when you were a kid, you only played licensed games based on movies and TV shows that you liked.
Pretty much. Yeah, I was a dumb kid.
Isn't that what every kid did?
Yeah.
No, there's so many other like NES games. You didn't even have an NES.
Well, you were like 28.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, Jurassic Park with real rat physics. Yeah. Yeah. My firepower keep me.
Okay, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. Our first email today comes from... I think you better handle this one, Greg.
First email today comes from Aditya Najarana.
That's actually probably pretty accurate.
Thank you.
Aditya?
Aditya.
Asks, I subscribed to PlayStation Plus day one, and the service has just kept getting better. I would like to know how the games that go free benefit from this, and how is this master stroke by Sony to boost hardware sales?
Well, you're a smart man and or woman to subscribe to PlayStation Plus. Or, I think it's usually the stuff that goes live on PlayStation Plus that's going to be free is something that isn't super popular, isn't ginormously popular, and or isn't popular at that moment, right? Borderlands is free right now. Borderlands, I think, is a brilliant move to put up free for PlayStation Plus members because, first, I'm playing it again. Like, it's one of those things, I played it when it first came out, fallen off, now I'm playing it with some friends trying to get through and get a platinum trophy, but it's getting you psyched up for Borderlands 2. So all of a sudden, there's this new audience who maybe 3 years ago missed it, playing it now. This is really cool, and now in 2 weeks, they buy Borderlands 2. Walking Dead, they put up the first two episodes free. Obviously, Walking Dead, huge with us. We all love it. Everybody plays it and thinks it's really cool.
Sure.
But not everybody's ready to take that jump. All of a sudden, you get those two games for free. You're like, oh my god, this was really cool. I want to see how the rest of the story goes. You go out and you buy it right now.
It's interesting that they gave you the first two episodes, not just the first one. But when I think about it, the second one is like a lot better.
Sure.
Just in terms of the drama that happens.
Exactly. And it shows you, I think, a little, like the whole game is based on story, right? So once you now have
those,
it has
its
hooks in you. And
you're invested.
Exactly. You get to replay, see how your decisions change things. Because right now, a lot of people who aren't playing The Walking Dead are saying, well, I want it when it's, you know, it's all out and I can get the whole story and yada, yada, yada. Whereas I think one of the fun things about it is, all right, I finished the episode and now I want to go back and change everything. I want to go back and see what this is. And then I want to be a part of a conversation with everybody. And so you give people that gateway drug to get them in, then they're hooked, Damon.
Yeah.
They just want more of that drug, and they're like, give me all the drugs.
I'll pay whatever you want. Just give it to me.
Well, remind us how much PlayStation Plus costs.
Ooh, I believe a year is $49.99, right?
So just $50 a year?
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
You get lots of stuff for free.
Totally, yeah.
Or discounted too, right?
Yeah, you get discounted. Well, that's the thing, like Borderlands is another good example, right? Free Borderlands and then 50% off all the DLC. So even if I had beaten Borderlands and now Damon was trying to play Borderlands with me for the first time, I'd be like, all right, cool, but I'm going to buy all the DLC, you buy it too, let's go in and play through that. It's a way to get those numbers up, get people talking about your games, get people excited about things right away.
It's a risk reward, right? You're risking that you might lose a few customers in the short term,
sure.
but long term, you're going to potentially gain a lot more from those people that you just gave away this content
right.
to.
Right, and they're putting out, you know, these downloadable games that I think a lot of people missed. There's still so much distrust with the PSN. People are wary of it with all the credit card stuff and anonymous.
Still? That's over a year ago, right?
Yeah, but I mean, think about it from your perspective, right? Like, you're an Xbox gamer, so like, you never put a credit card into PSN, so like, you really have no reasoning to do it. So like, all of a sudden, if they're like, oh, well, hey, or try this, you're like, okay, this is cool, and it is working, and it is easy, I will continue to go down and do that, I think. And that's a great example. I think they learned a lot from when they did the Welcome Back program, and they were like, sorry, that PSN's been off for a month. Here's Little Big Planet, and here's Infamous. And they were giving you games that had sequels out at that moment or about to come out that were coming out really soon. So again, you get invested and be like, oh man, Little Big Planet's awesome. I want to play Little Big Planet.
Yeah, they didn't randomly pick those games. That was very, very calculated.
Yesterday, Randy Pitchford was in the office.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one-man band behind Borderlands. He made it all himself.
All by himself.
He's the notch of Borderlands. But you asked him, how did that conversation start about bringing Borderlands free to PlayStation Plus, right?
Sure, yeah. He'll talk about it up at noon on Monday on Start. But it's one of those things, yeah, he's the developer, so it was something between 2K and Sony, and he wasn't sure exactly who came to each other, but he loved the idea, obviously, because he made this game and he wants to get it into everybody's hands. And you talk about, like, the PlayStation install base, right? Like, it's grown exponentially over the years. So when Borderlands came out, sure, maybe a lot of people who own PS3s didn't own PS3s then. So to get that and have that chance to get down to play with it, he's totally behind.
So I don't know what, like, the business side of PSN is like, but on the App Store, games go free and then go paid all the time. You know, they drop in price, go back up in price. And the reason that happens is because when it goes back up in price, you see a bump in sales. And presumably it's because a lot of people downloaded your app when it was free, and then they're talking about it, they're telling their friends, they want to play it, you know, hey, this puzzle game's really cool, check it out. And then it's not free anymore, you know, it's $1, $2, or $3. But then since a lot more people are talking about it, then they get more, you know, they see a big spike in sales.
It pushes it up to the top of the conversation
exactly.
a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so if you have a game that's not really selling very much on PSN anyway, you know, drop it free and get people talking about it.
You also see iOS developers, when they're about ready to release a new game, a lot of times their previous game will go free.
Yep. Yeah, and so that's what we're talking about with Borderlands.
Yeah.
And I also think a lot of the Plus games that go free, you know, obviously there's plenty of exceptions, but a lot of them are Sony games. And with their properties, you know, they want to push Plus as a service so they can really do what they want with their own properties.
Yeah. You're seeing that expand. I mean, Just Cause 2, that was a PlayStation Plus game that was free. Get out there and
do it.
That
game is awesome.
Everybody loves Just Cause 2. And it's one of those things, like, I mean, how many units is Just Cause 2 moving right now, you know?
Yeah.
Not money, right? Not many. Not money. Not many. Well, it's not making money much either. Money. So why not? Yeah, put it free and let people get a taste of it.
Ryan, does the Xbox need something like PlayStation Plus? Buy-in rewards?
Financially, no. They seem to be doing just fine. And the reality of the market is they're not gonna take those kind of steps until PSN gets so big that it really, really threatens. Not that it's not it's a solid service, but you know, Xbox Live is the number, it's the top service. So until that threat looms a little larger in Microsoft's rearview mirror, they're probably going to hang back and be
That's one of the things, right? Is that PlayStation is the latecomer. They had the worst service when they started, and so they are trying to make it up. They are trying to make it enticing and say, this is why you need to play your games on PlayStation. This is why you need to have a PlayStation Plus.
Would I love to be getting Xbox Live Arcade games for free with my Gold subscription? Absolutely, but until Sony starts breathing down their neck a little harder, I don't see it happen.
Yeah, they have no need to do that right now.
Speaking of Xbox Live Arcade games, an awesome one is out today.
Yes, Mark of the Ninja.
It's so good. I really recommend you guys play it and everyone at home plays it. But tell us a little bit about it. You reviewed it today.
Yes, so the review is up on IGN. Spoiler alert, 9.0 Editor's Choice Award. It is fantastic. It's from Klee Entertainment, which is the guys that brought you the Shank games. Mm-hmm. And if you're out there, I've talked to some people like, well, Shank wasn't really my cup of tea. Well, this is a much deeper, more layered game. I mean, Shank was literally just a beautiful game. It looked like a playable Adult Swim cartoon, right? Mm-hmm. This is a much, much deeper game. It is a pure 2D stealth game. You are a ninja, obviously, and so you're going through each level. You're climbing on the walls, climbing on the ceilings, using your grappling hook, hiding behind vases and under grates, and
it's sort of like Ninja Gaiden on the NES, but much more stealthy.
Very
you're not
much.
Just running forward and slashing everybody
and
in your
what
path.
I, hit by condors.
Yeah, I know, right?
What I really, really love about it is it actually, unlike most stealth games that are like, oh yeah, you can play how you want. You can do a lethal playthrough or a non-lethal playthrough, and in the end, like, you don't really get, you only get rewarded for one of those, whichever one the game designers actually intended you to take. This one, you get rewarded no matter what with a sort of an experience point system where if you want to go stealth, and you sneak by a guy, you'll see a little little ding pop up, plus 200 points, mm-hmm. remained undetected. Yeah. Or if you kill a guy, you'll get the points, but if you kill him silently, you'll get more points.
Or if you hide the body, then.
Yeah, exactly. You get extra points for, that. Points for hiding the body.
I like that rewarding. Yeah. Because that's always, you know, Metal Gear, you're like, this is a sneaking mission. Okay, pop, pop, shoot him on the head.
Speaking of Metal Gear, there's an awesome Metal Gear homage. There is one of your distraction items, and you've got. You've got terror darts that you can hit guys Whoa. With and they'll freak out and start shooting at whoever.
I want terror darts.
Yeah, I mean, don't we all? And then, but they've got a cardboard box, civil cardboard box. You can hide under it, scooch behind him, and then as he walks by, just you poke out from the box and go, yank, stab him and drag Whoa. Him out of the box, and then you can get up and be on your merry way. And
do you put him in the box?
Yeah, he's hidden under the box. So it is, and what's great is you unlock all these things with those experience points as you go. So you're unlocking new moves, you're unlocking new ways to attack and play the game. And then when you finish the game, there's a new game plus mode that lets you go back through, start over with all your abilities, but the guys are tougher. So it's just, there's plenty of reason to go through twice, and... Yeah. I actually am looking forward to playing it now that it's actually out on my retail Xbox because I want the real achievement points for it.
It's $15?
$15. Well worth it.
I'm on board.
It's an awesome game. You reviewed that one, and I'm working on the Joe Danger 2 review, which is out next Friday.
Yes.
And
so these good games on... Like, Friday is supposed to be a weird dumping ground because we're not conditioned as Xbox gamers to expect anything on Friday. It's, you know, it's been since 2005, since launch. Xbox Live Arcade Wednesday. And... We've seen the Friday thing happen a little bit, and usually it's a crappy game they just sort of dump out.
I know, but it seems arbitrary.
Yeah, and so this today is Mark of the Ninja, and next Friday is Joe Danger 2. So these are both games that probably belonged in Summer of Arcade because they're amazing. So I don't get the whole Friday thing. So that's why I'm glad we're sitting here talking about these because it'll be easy for people to just miss them entirely. Yeah. So go on Live Arcade and check out.
Sorted out Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, what's up?
Jay Allard, I don't know who's over there anymore.
You think reviewing reviewing Xbox Live Arcade games is a little strange because every Xbox Live Arcade game has a trial.
Yeah, you can try.
So anyone can try it for themselves, you know. So
there's
like,
no excuse.
What's the review really doing there?
Yeah, I think about that a lot on iPhone.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So strange.
It is.
Anyway.
But you want to know. I mean, you know, it could just be that cross-section that's only one thing. And then is this mechanic that I find endearing right now, does it get annoying later on?
It's like Greg said, you know, that first taste is free, and then, take all my money, give me some drugs!
Yeah. Love drugs.
This is Big Tony style.
Big Tony style!
His question is, next week we'll host the iPhone 5 unveiling and a Nintendo press conference that will likely outline the Wii U launch. Which one is more relevant to your interests?
iPhone 5.
For sure.
Yeah.
As iPhone 5 affects my life every day because I use my phone every day.
iPhone 5 is the one as soon as I'm refreshing the page to buy the iPhone
pre-order,
5.
Pre-order.
I don't even know what's going to happen. I'm just ready for a new iPhone. My home button's broken.
We're all very interested to see what the Wii U launch, you know, when it's going to come, how much it's going to cost.
Sure.
But, you know, our iPhones are in our pockets every day, you know.
Yeah.
Precious. I know.
Yeah, the Wii U is like... I totally think the zombie game is awesome. Zombie U, right?
Yep.
Why did I blink on that? Zombie U is awesome from what I've seen of it. I want to play that. But, like, I'm not... right now, this moment, I have no intention to pre-order a Wii U. Like,
I'm out, too, until... So for me, the first-party stuff always eventually pulls me in on the Nintendo consoles. Haven't seen any killer first-party things that have appealed to me just yet, but I'll get there eventually.
Exactly.
Sure.
Like, I played all the stuff at Comic-Con, and it was like, Pikmin's awesome, but it's not, like, a system seller for me, personally. You know.
Mm-hmm. I'll probably buy one at launch. I haven't not bought a Nintendo console at launch ever, you know, as long as I was buying my own video games. You know, I like Pikmin too much. I like some of that stuff too much. And I'm also just a big gadget guy. You know, I like having tablets and gadgets and handheld and hardware. You know, that's sort of where my interest lies. So, you know, I want to pick one up just because it's something new, but... You know, it was not an impressive showing at E3. You know, I'm really curious about the price. So, yeah, much more excited about the iPhone 5. But, you know, the Wii U, I like people that do new things and like companies that try new things that I haven't seen before. So,
Question for you guys is, would any of you buy a Wii U at launch with a specific eye on profiteering, on putting it up for resale on eBay or something?
I saw so many people get burned on the PS3 on
that
one.
Because the 360, right? You can 360 became a little tough to come by for the first few months, and people were getting, you know, 50%, 100% markup on them. And I, of course, was just...
The Wii was crazy at its launch. I remember, like, seeing signs on the road, like, you know...
The Wii,
just people, you know, private sellers selling the Wii U for, like, $1,500 or something. Yeah. Like, it was crazy that first Christmas.
Yeah.
I got burned bad on PS3.
I'm sorry, did I say Wii U?
Yes.
I meant the Wii.
Yeah, the Wii was
Are you from the future?
Yeah, the Wii was my first and only Nintendo console I bought at launch, and it's one of those things I camped out in the mall to get my pre-order in, and then that day I was working for the newspaper, and I covered the PlayStation 3 line at Best Buy, because people were camped out at Best Buy for it, and I remember going down the line of the 30 people they capped it at, and only one of them was there to play it. They were buying it to play, and everyone else was like, we're flipping it on eBay.
Whoa.
I was like, okay, and then I walked over to it. I was like, I finished, and I walked over and bought my Wii and went home, and I was like, this is weird.
We are those incredible assholes that like would buy a PlayStation 3 on launch day, just buy it and then walk out in the street and smash it in front of everybody.
They still do that. There'll be those YouTube videos for Wii U.
Enjoy your 15 seconds of non-internet fame.
Yeah.
When I waited in line to get the Wii, I went to a Target that opened at 7 a.m. or whenever. Yeah. So I got there at 5, and I was at the very end of the line, and they were handing out the vouchers to make sure they had enough, and I got the second to last one. And so there was someone behind me got the very final one, and then behind them was like a mom and a little boy, like a little kid that was like 7, and he was like just one back too far to get it. And, you know, he was, like, asking his mom, it's like, what does it mean? Why do we not get the paper? And she's like, oh, you know, come on, maybe, you know, Santa will bring you one. I was close to, like, giving him my voucher, but then no.
You stayed strong.
Twilight Princess, I gotta get home.
You realize that was all an act, right? That was scripted, and you did not break.
That's true. That's well good. Little boy's an actor.
Justin, your hair looks good today.
Thank you.
It does.
Greg, so does yours.
Thank you.
Is Randy Pitchford still giving haircuts?
Yeah.
Greg, what do you have? What do you have on the couch there?
So I didn't know you guys did this. You went to PAX. Well, I knew you went to PAX without me.
We did go to PAX.
And while you were at PAX, you had this meet and greet. You hold one.
Okay.
And while you had the meet and greet, you had them sign these Get Well Soon cards.
These are,
I have cancer, if you didn't know.
These are IGN fans that sign these Get Well cards for Greg. It's pretty awesome.
I got all teary-eyed when they gave them to me at work today. It's so touching. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome you guys did that. Thank you. It means so much to me. I haven't gone through and read them all. I'm going to try to.
Yeah. The meet and greet was great. IGN fans are so cool. Yeah. They're the coolest guys ever. Yeah.
You know,
and girls.
If the post office would actually produce that stamp, they'd probably get out of debt.
That stamp would sell better than the... You know, they have like a lot of unsold Simpsons stamps. Like they lost a lot of money on their Simpsons stamps. Yeah.
The stamps are stupid. Can we just stop making
I know. The post office is sort of...
The post office is kind of stupid.
Yeah. Today, yeah. Greg, we have a misconnection.
We do. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as you know...
Wait, is this Craigslist?
Yes. As you know, GameScoop
Craigslist.
And IGN unite people around the world, and we like to help people knock boots when we can. We have a problem here, though. Justin Hodge wrote into me on my PSN and then to my email.
Wow.
He was on a site called Omegle. Are you aware of Omegle?
It's a video chatting site.
A video chatting site. While he was there, he met a girl... between 12 and 2 in the morning.
Oh, I thought you were going to say her age. I was like, whoa.
No, well, she's 17, but he's young too.
Okay.
Met this girl between 12 and 2 in the morning.
So it's legal.
It's legal, yes, totally legal. He's a kid too. Saturday, September 1st, on Omegle. She was 17 and from South Carolina or California.
Opposite
coasts. But I think it was Carolina. And she wants to go to USC. Here's the problem. Justin, this girl hit it off. They're talking. Turns out she's a huge IGN fan. She listens to games.
Of course she is.
Beyond Unlocked. Whatever yours is, tech fetish. She listens to all the shows, and they're hitting off, and everything's going well, and I guess he put it in the PSN message. I think his power went out. So he never exchanged information with this girl, but he was hitting it off, so he wanted to go here. Let's see if I've got all the details. She listens, blah, blah, blah.
The power went out, or his girlfriend pulled the plug. Yeah.
What are you doing?
So if she's listening, if the girl is listening, she says, I think that might be me. What, do we have instructions?
We do, yes. Okay. You are to contact him on PSN at FailLobster.
What if
Fail Lobster?
Do we know she has a PS3? Word. I guess he
Well, he said to give the email too. Justin's serious. Justin is in love with this random girl from South Carolina or California.
But going to
not
USC.
Close states. What?
Yeah.
USC. We got the letters SC in here.
Yeah.
Maybe
between 12 and 2 in the morning. Of course, that would be different time zones based on wherever you are. Justin didn't think that part. Anyways, reddeadhodge, H-O-D-G, @gmail.com is Justin's email, if you are this
girl.
So he
was comfortable with this being broadcast.
Yes, he was. Okay. He's very adamant about all this being broadcast. Okay. He's desperate here.
Well, Justin or Mystery Girl, please let us know if you guys get together.
And nobody fake him out. Don't do that to
Don't be
guy.
Jerks.
Yeah.
Come on now. IGN, GameScoop, let's all be united here.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, dear viewers. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, if you have any questions. My name is Damon, this is IGN GameScoop, and we're out. My firepower keep me
now, always been a foul child. My guns go boom, boom, and your guns go. I got the wow style, always been a foul child. My guns go boom, boom, and your guns go. I got the wow style, always been a foul child. My guns go boom, boom, and your guns go. I got the wow style, always been a foul child. My guns go boom, boom, and your guns go. Wow. Guns go boom booming, my guns go boom booming. I got the wild style, always been a foul child. My guns go boom booming, yo guns go. My firepower keep me.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.